We're back with more of The Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
Welcome back to The Instigator. It is 11:30 on Friday, which means we have TSN Insider Darren Dreger on the line. Dregs, it's Marty, Rivs, and
no
Brian
PD
Giotto.
Today.
No PD today. Good morning.
Wow, we're all going to get a word in edgewise. No PD means we can talk.
Wow.
Well, we still have Marty on the show, so.
See? Geo steps right in. That's the problem here. Hey, Dregs, you're in St. Louis right now. Did you happen to catch a game last night, and what did you think of Big Zdeno Chara and his broken jaw and everything?
Yeah, no, I did watch the game last night from afar. Made the trip to St. Louis this morning. I mean, you know, I'm always careful to throw the term hero around, particularly when it comes to pro sports, because you know, we use it as a loose adjective, but, you know, the leadership qualities of Zdeno Chara are reaching near legendary status. Who's kidding who? You know, disappointing, of course, that he couldn't finish the game. And obviously that game was cloaked in yet another controversy involving the officiating. But, you know, the St. Louis Blues have got something solid going right now. It's not just like they've figured out the Boston Bruins. I mean, they've incorporated a level of smash-mouth hockey that we haven't seen in a long, long time. And they got away with another one last night with the officiating, you know, letting them play. And that plays deeply into the game plan in the hands of the St. Louis Blues. So, you know, Boston's big boys are going to have to step up. Otherwise, this series will end on Sunday.
So you have Barbashev that is going to have a hearing with the National Hockey League. What are your thoughts on that situation? Do you feel that he will get some disciplinary action?
Well, the fact that, you know, they call a hearing obviously tells you that it's being deeply considered. And, you know, that's pretty clear. But they don't waste players, executives, agents' time this time of year, especially in the Stanley Cup Final. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a game. They're playing with house money here because the St. Louis Blues have the series edge. I mean, it was a missed call. I mean, it was a blatant hit to the head. And, you know, the Sanford play was another one. And obviously the missed trip by Tyler Bozak was the most controversial of them all. I'm not guaranteeing that there'll be a suspension on Barbashev. But, again, when they elevate it to a point of calling a hearing, then that means that George Parros and company have looked at it from all angles. And they at least want to hear from the player's perspective what he was thinking just prior to initiating that hit.
But does that change the mindset of having that hearing? Do they already have their minds made up that it's going to be a suspension? And what does Barbashev say in that meeting that's going to change Parros' mind? It's, you see it on tape. I think it is going to be a suspension, in my opinion. But you know, why? Why go through the process of hearing what the player says? I mean, I'm just trying to think inside that room what happens there.
Yeah, I hear you. But again, just, you know, based on my experience from afar, I've never been involved in one, but I just know that when Parros and company run it through the car wash, as we like to say, there's so many different opinions and voices that are injected into the discussion before Parros decides that it's worthy of at least considering supplemental discipline. And if he's on the fence, oftentimes it will be a simple explanation from the player that determines the outcome. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to favor Barbashev in this case, but that's also why the Department of Player Safety was introduced way back when. You know, part of it was to curb head hits and the nastiness at one time that we used to see on a somewhat consistent basis in the league. But it's also to cover up. You know, maybe if there had been a penalty or, you know, a major penalty, I'm not sure that it elevated to that, but it could have. You know, the hearing wouldn't be necessary. But this is the fallback plan for the National Hockey League to make sure that supplemental discipline can and will be considered. So, I'm not guaranteeing that there's going to be a suspension, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a one-game suspension.
Dregs, we had Ralph Kruger on yesterday, and we had Jason Botrill on yesterday as well. So I don't know if you were able to go on demand or check it out on iTunes through the podcast and listen to the interview or not. But we asked them both about Jeff Skinner. It's getting crunch time right now with the Skinner negotiation. Yeah. Where I know Bob McKenzie sent out a tweet yesterday also. So where are you hearing, and when is this going to get done?
Well, that's a great question. It feels like it's reaching a breaking point. And that could be today. It could be tomorrow. But it's in the next day or a couple or a few days. And by breaking point, you know, I think the player has made it pretty clear that he's got a number in mind. And my sense tells me that that number is around $9 million annual average salary. Now, the Buffalo Sabres, all along, I believe, have also wanted to keep that annual average salary in the eights. So, you know, is it a case of where Jason Botterill has drawn the line in the sand and maybe calling the bluff of the player in this case? You know, I mean, Jeff Skinner has leverage, of course. He's a pending unrestricted free agent, and there are a number of teams who are looking for the offense that he can provide. But the Buffalo Sabres, I don't need to tell you guys this, man, they were starving for offense. You know, so Skinner arrives on the scene. He finds magic. He finds chemistry. And that matters to both him and the Buffalo Sabres. So I think, if it's not today, maybe it's tomorrow. It's going to be very, very interesting. I'd like to say that I feel like the situation is leaning in favor of Buffalo getting a deal done, but I'm not so sure right now. But information could break in the hours ahead here.
Like, is there a situation that Jason Botterill is basically sitting back saying, this is my best offer. It's an eight-year deal for... I'm just going to say hypothetically $8.75 million a year. Is Jason Botterill sitting there saying, listen, I can offer you 8 years where you're only going to get 7 years on the market? Is that basically kind of like the major selling point?
I think that's exactly where it's at. And, you know, that, again, is just based on experience and history and reporting on these type of stalemates. But I think that Buffalo has reached that point where they feel like they've gone as far as they can go. And that extra year 100% matters. I remember when John Tavares signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs as an unrestricted free agent. I mean, there were some around Tavares that, you know, were a little miffed that, you know, maybe they didn't push to get a trade done from the Islanders to the Toronto Maple Leafs so that they could tag on an extra year. So that eighth year 100% matters, and that could be where Buffalo is sitting. Look, we're giving you that extra year, so you've got to give back a little bit here on the annual average salary. There's a reason or a couple of reasons why this deal isn't done. But again, my sense is that the negotiation is basically over, and now it might be up to Jeff Skinner to make a decision.
Do you think that, and I don't know if you've heard any numbers or signing bonuses, but... really focusing on a front-loaded contract and saying, here, we'll give you $20 million in the first 12 months of this deal and really load it up, lockout protection. Do you think Botterill is trying everything that he can or has the power to do to get it done? Or, as you know, Rivs is saying, is he sitting on the number and that's it?
Well, no, but I think, Marty, that would be all included in that, right? You know, keep in mind, you know, Newport Sports is one of the best in the business at negotiating deals of this magnitude. And if you look at the history of the players of significance where Newport has managed and negotiated the terms of the extension, normally, at least recently, you're looking at very signing bonus heavy contracts. So I don't know this, but I'm going to go on an assumption that that's likely what the Skinner contract is going to look like. And I'm sure there'll be some form of no-move or trade protection that kicks in at some point, if not throughout the deal.
At what point, so you have restricted free agents negotiating. How is that going to affect the market this offseason moving into the trades with them, you know, the Mitch Marners, Kyle Connors. I mean, there's so many elite restricted free agents. Do you feel that they're going to hold up kind of like the market and, you know, I guess the trade market?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment and a fair assumption because, look, normally, you know, the draft this year, June 21st, round one in Vancouver, is a breeding ground for trades. And I think we're going to see some trade activity. You know, if you zero in on Winnipeg, you know, they're going to trade Jacob Trouba, or at least I believe they're going to. And part of that is through necessity, and maybe that's not the only transaction that Chevalier has to make. You know, when you look at Patrick Laine, you look at Kyle Connor, and you look at, you know, some of the other deals that he's going to make. But if you're able to get your restricted free agents under contract prior to June 21st, then you know what you're dealing with. You know exactly how much money you've got to push out. But that's not likely going to be the case. I think Mitch Marner is a linchpin. I think that Mika Rantanen is a linchpin in Colorado. When those deals get done, then I think you're going to see, you know, maybe the Winnipeg guys get looked after, and then maybe Brayden Point. I know that Calgary, Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Flames, is working hard to get his players signed, including Matthew Tkachuk, and you've got Sebastian Aho with the Carolina Hurricanes. And, you know, a lot of other deals, 100%, will be motivated by how much money these clubs have to spend to sign their RFAs, because you guys know, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if you didn't like the way the negotiation was going with your restricted free agent, you just forced them into a bridge contract, right? A 2-year or 3-year deal. Now, you can't do that because the players seem to have more of the leverage, especially the top-end guys.
Biggest names on the blocks right now. We've heard the normal ones. Any new big names coming out?
I don't think any new big names yet. That's likely going to change here moving forward, obviously. I mentioned Jacob Trouba. I don't know about you guys, but I'm fascinated by what's going on in Pittsburgh or what's not going on in Pittsburgh with Phil Kessel.
Yep.
I mean, this is a veteran general manager in Jimmy Rutherford just playing poker with Phil Kessel and essentially saying, all right, you don't want to waive to go to Minnesota? No problem. And you're going to play in Pittsburgh next year. And that's fine. I mean, Phil Kessel is still a very good player, and provided that he's okay with playing in Pittsburgh, then that's where he's going to play. But if Kessel doesn't want to go back to Pittsburgh for whatever reason, then he's going to have to, you know, provide a bit more flexibility in terms of any further trade negotiations, because the teams like Arizona that he'd want to go to don't want to pay whatever the price is, or there isn't a proper trade fit for Jimmy Rutherford. And that's the other thing here. You know, it's not like Phil Kessel is a washed-up has-been. You know, this is a guy who can still earn his keep and earn his salary and be a very successful secondary offensive weapon. So, well, Jimmy Rutherford, man, he's been down this path before, and he's not going to let the player dictate the terms.
Dregs, you talk about Kessel, Zaitsev. There's been talk about him wanting out of Toronto and the Leafs having to shed some salary. You got the Philadelphia Flyers sending a letter out explaining how offer sheets work to their fan base so that they're prepared. Like, are we gearing up for this massive change of scenery for players, offer sheets and all that? Like, should we be ready for that?
Yeah, I've been preaching that for months now. And if you want to get a chuckle, just check out my replies on Twitter. Because, you know, fan bases are offended at the notion of an offer sheet. And they want guys like me in the media to stop talking about it. But I guess what I would wonder is, you know, even though you're going to piss a lot of people off by doing it, unless you're in a position where you can draft a superstar player, you know, what other opportunities do you have? Well, you've got one inside the collective bargaining agreement that allows you to pay for and effectively steal a player, you know, when all it takes is term money away from a rival. Why wouldn't you do that? And I know it's going to upset the apple cart because, you know, let's use Marner as an example. If Philadelphia goes after him and they're willing to pay him, you know, $14 million a year or whatever it is, well, that's going to sour a lot of general managers with up-and-coming players, because that then becomes the standard for whatever Mitch Marner is. And look, I can tell you that when Austin Matthews signed his contract extension, there were a lot of managers upset that the Toronto Maple Leafs conceded and gave him only a 5-year term. So it's already happened among NHL teams where the general managers, look, I can't worry about what's happening around the NHL. I have to look after my own. And it seems clear to me like the Philadelphia Flyers are taking that position. And I think that's overall good for the marketing aspect of our sport.
Well, that's good.
Dregs, we've got one more for you before we let you go. We have Boston-St. Louis next game. Who, if St. Louis does win, who is your Conn Smythe winner?
It's a tough one. I'm going to go with Ryan O'Reilly, fellas. And, you know, and I've said this a couple of times this week already. I'm one of the voters for the major awards. And every year about this time, I'm reminded of why I hate the timing of having to submit my vote prior to the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, because players do emerge. Ryan O'Reilly had a terrific regular season on a bad team for the first half of that regular season in St. Louis. Yet he was super consistent. He was the backbone. He was the character of the St. Louis Blues. He pulled everybody along. And look at what he's done, particularly in this Stanley Cup final. When I did round one, St. Louis and Winnipeg, I walked out of that round before going to the Worlds, and I went, you know what? I missed an opportunity here. Ryan O'Reilly could have been one of the five men named on my heart ballot, and I, full disclosure, he's not. So if I'm willing to put Ryan O'Reilly on my heart ballot today, then he'd be my Conn Smythe winner if St. Louis wins. And if Boston wins, I think Tuukka Rask has done enough in this postseason that he's earned that.
Awesome, Dregs. Well, thanks again. Enjoy St. Louis. Listen, I know James Duthie, the fantastic host, is not with you guys because he's covering the Raptors. So that means there's no babysitter for Puffy. So be careful with Puffy when he goes out into town, because you know he can get in trouble over there.
Yeah, well, you know how starved for that sort of entertainment he'll be without his running mate. So I'm going to have to be on double probation tonight and behave myself.
just remember, St. Louis could get a little dangerous if you don't know where you're going. Yes. So be very careful. We want to talk to you again next Friday. And by that point, we'll have a Stanley Cup champion. So, Dregs, thanks again.